HBO at 10 p.m. And Monday, April 19th, 911. On the spring premiere, Maddie, Jennifer Love Hewitt, attempts to finish her shift before going into labor. Meanwhile, Athena, Angela Bassett, and Station 118 discover the shocking cause of a pileup. Fox at 8 p.m. And that was Us Must, TV, Movies, and More by Emily Longeretta. All those articles came from the April 26, 2021 issue of Us Weekly. That concludes today's readings from Us Weekly. This has been Lydia Coppell for the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Thank you for listening to GARS.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American's Business and Oil and Lifestyle sections, followed by Far West Texas News at 7.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
The Midland Health Department is providing clinical services by appointment only. Appointments will be scheduled from 8:15 a.m. to 3:45 p.m. Monday through Friday. The Health Department will have immunization clinics 8:15 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday. Appointments are required for immunizations. To schedule an appointment, call 681-7613.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 56 with rain showers. Tonight, a few showers with a low in the upper 50s. Then, tomorrow, a few showers with a high in the low 60s. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the upper 50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 6 a.m.
Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, April 24th. Developing technology. Permian Basin Center of Exxon's methane mitigation efforts. The story was written by Mellon McEwen. The world's largest oil company is putting a lot of its financial muscle behind addressing emissions from its operations, and ExxonMobil's Permian Basin holdings are a center of those efforts. Quote, "It's a really exciting area. The Permian Basin is a vast space and an important area, not just for Exxon, but for the country," said Matt Colazar, ExxonMobil's chief environmental scientist. The oil field giant has already eliminated over 67,000 tons of methane emissions from its unconventional operations between 2016 and 2020, and plans further reductions in methane intensity by 40% to 50% by 2025. Colasar said the roots of his efforts, where he is aided by a team that includes 5 full-time PhDs working on methane emissions and detection, goes back to 2017 when Exxon announced a voluntary program to beyond regulations in cutting emissions. Speaking with the Reporter Telegram by telephone, Colasar said the company has tried every commercially available leak detection technology available and some that weren't so widely available. Quote, "We've learned a lot. All the technologies worked well. All have their strengths and their weaknesses," he said. "Ultimately, we think it will be a combination of technologies depending on the equipment we want to monitor and the frequency of the monitoring," end quote. ExxonMobil has been field testing 8 emerging detection technologies and is one of the operators installing new SUFI methane detection technology. Exxon is installing this technology in the Permian Basin to provide continuous site-level methane monitoring at its Poker Lake unit. Colasar said the SUFI technology, systematic observation of facility intermittent emissions was developed by Scientific Aviation. That and sensors deployed at the site will let him know if there's unintended emissions. The biggest challenge in addressing methane emissions has been monitoring for the emissions and, more challenging, to do so in a cost-effective manner, he said. Quote, it's a struggle to ensure we can address emissions and do so cost-effectively, he said. Toward that effort, Exxon has applied with the Environmental Protection Agency to use airplanes equipped with new cutting-edge detection technology to conduct flyover inspections over large areas. The company has also joined with the University of Texas and others on Project Astra to develop a real-time network for methane monitoring. The goal is to spread out sensors so they talk to each other continuously, Kolesar said. Quote, we know the technology works. It's a matter of putting the pieces together, he said. Ultimately, he said the goal is not just to help ExxonMobil reduce its methane emissions, but to improve the industry's performance overall. Quote, we've designed these projects to be collaborative, he said. The spirit is collaboration. We share learnings across the industry. We believe methane can and should be cost-effectively mitigated, end quote. Oilfield Water Conference to be held in Frisco. The story was written by Mellon McEwen. Flaring and emissions may dominate the conversation around the environmental impact of the energy industry, but water continues to be a concern being addressed by the industry, especially in the arid Permian Basin. Quote, water has been a hot-button issue, Joseph Tripke, managing partner Oilfield Water Connection, told the reporter Telegram by telephone. The company was founded in 2019 as a networking event and newsletter platform devoted to business, market, and finance trends in oilfield water management. Quote, as ESG, environment, social, and governance, heats up, flaring and hydraulic fracturings is of concern. But water is the first everyone knew as an environmental issue, he continued. Tripke, along with Peter Cook, also managing partner at Oilfield Water Connection, are hosting the Oilfield Water Markets 2021 conference at the Hyatt Regency Frisco on May 12th and 13th to examine marketplace issues in full-cycle oilfield water management. Topics will include ESG and sustainability, Tripke said. ESG-focused topics include water management's identity in a sustainable finance-driven world and the intersection of ESG fund flows and oilfield water management to recycle and reuse. Pragmatic ways to achieve sustainability in oilfield water will also be a topic. Panelists will also examine the outlook for shale, water market trends, the state of water midstream, key themes in commercial water recycling, exploration and production trends to look out for between now and 2025, and legislation and regulations related to produced water. Finance will also be discussed as panelists look at ways to attract ESG-focused investors, deal-making, and ways to build value in oilfield water. Case studies will focus on changing the economics of recycling produced water, evaporation, and ESG solutions for lower costs, Delaware Basin water issues, green innovative technologies for water treatment, and cost-effective water disposal. Three new members joined Petroleum Museum Hall of Fame. The story was written by Mellon McEwen. Staff at the Petroleum Museum are busy setting up for the upcoming Petroleum Museum Hall of Fame induction ceremony. The dinner, scheduled for April 29th, will be held at the Barbara and George H.W. Bush Convention Center and is expected to be attended by 350 people, according to Kathy Shannon, the museum's executive director. quote, "It's always exciting and wonderful to be able to share these stories," she told the reporter at Telegram in a telephone interview. Continuing the quote, "You may know their names, but not their stories," end quote. As the Hall of Fame has grown since its founding in 1967, when Frank Pickrell, who was responsible for the Santa Rita No. 1 well, was the first inductee, its members have changed, she said. They have evolved from what she called the Wildcatters blazing new trails to those who have developed good practices, good insights, and found ways to make the industry better. Quote, "Frank Late did deals with a handshake, probably the last one to do that. Paul Morris took the business side and excelled in managing people. Fred Newman invented things that made the industry safer," she said, of the three new members joining the Hall of Fame. The late Frank M. Late, an Arkansas native who came to West Texas in 1939 to open a car dealership in San Angelo, became one of the largest automobile dealers in the Southwest from 1936 to 1999. He began his involvement in the drilling business in 1944 by forming Cactus Drilling with George Banker in Hobbs, New Mexico. Late moved to Midland, Odessa when the Sprayberry Trend play began, forming Cactus Drilling Corporation with Baker and Frank Garrett. While Cactus Drilling focused on shallow drilling, the newer sister company drilled deeper and had a wider geological footprint. By the time Cactus was sold in 1980, it was the largest U.S. land-based contract drilling company. He also formed Cardinal Chemical with Baron Ulmer Kidd in the early 1960s, selling it to Dowell Chemical, and bought Republic Supply, now part of National Oil Well. West Virginia native Paul L. Morris found his way into the energy industry by receiving a Hope Natural Gas Company scholarship to study engineering at the University of Cincinnati. He went to work for Columbia Gas System Service Corporation in Columbus, Ohio, after graduation. He eventually became the company's vice president of exploration and production in 1976, moving to Houston. He came to Midland in 1981 as president and chief executive officer of Banner Energy, joining Wagner and Brown in 1988, becoming chief executive officer in 1994. He and Ed Jones launched Elk River Resources in 2013, where he served as part owner, president, and chief executive officer until 2019, when he became senior advisor to the board. After graduating from the University of Northwest Louisiana in 1965, Fred M. Newman joined Schlumberger as a field engineer, arriving in Midland in 1974. Rather than taking another transfer, he decided to go out on his own. He purchased several shallow oil and gas wells in New Mexico and participated in workovers, re-entries, and new drilling. He and Jim Pruitt then formed Aztec Drilling. In the 1970s, he purchased several small drilling rigs and formed Fred M. Newman Incorporated, a drilling contractor business. In 1982, he formed Total Abandonment Plugging Service. He and three of his children formed Triple N Services in 1986, growing it to become one of the Permian's leading plugging and abandonment contractors.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, April 25th, 2021. Let's kill the golden goose. Stocks dropped on news reports that President Biden is considering nearly doubling the capital gains taxes on the wealthy. Quote from the Wall Street Journal by Dennis Elam, associate professor of Texas A&M San Antonio, and a 1966 graduate of Andrews High School. The tale has given rise to the idiom, killing the goose that lays the golden eggs, which refers to the short-sighted destruction of a valuable resource or to an unprofitable action motivated by greed. The goose that laid the golden eggs. Congress sees a group making what it considers exorbitant profits. It quickly passes legislation to confiscate those profits, of course knowing better how to spend other people's money. This invariably happens near the end of mania in some asset category. And then, surprise, the legislation never collects the taxes that were envisioned. Okay, what mania does that paragraph describe? It could be the current record stock market, but instead, I am thinking of the 1980 Windfall Profit Tax Act. In fact, the illusory windfall was due to the oil companies literally selling all their inventory during the second embargo. The oldest inventory was at the very oldest prices, known as LIFO treatment, below the first embargo prices of 1972. The effect on the Permian Basin was near immediate. Oil prices peaked in 1981. Positive social mood caused the First National Bank of Midland to block off Wall Street for a year to add 10 stories to its downtown office building. Quietly, Exxon and Amoco both closed their large office buildings in Andrews. By 1986, the oil price had fallen from the mid-30s to $12. Real estate prices collapsed along with the savings and loan industry. First National of Midland went bust and was taken over by NCNB, later dubbed No Cash for Nobody. But that is the way manias usually end. This tax grab is another historic indicator that the market rally is on borrowed time. We still expect a top this summer. The number of new stock price highs takes 9 columns, while new lows account for just 1. A front page article describes how 3 out of work photographers attempted to make a fortune trading stocks online. Again, the social mood clues abound. Business is recovering, air travel is resuming, and positive economic predictions abound. One result of the pandemic has been the work-from-home dynamic now adopted by many businesses. The result is an explosion in for sale, for lease signs for commercial office property. The same thing is happening there that occurred with enclosed shopping malls. Crude oil remains above $60. As demand increases, West Texas Intermediate crude may well hit $70 plus this summer. The Economist. Outlook for the U.S. Economy by M. Ray Perryman, head of the Perryman Group. The forecast for U.S. economic recovery is improving. In March, 916,000 net new jobs were added across the nation, led by leisure and hospitality, education, and construction. The unemployment rate fell to 6.0%, and the number of unemployed dropped to 9.7 million. Overall, activity is in a much better place than the lows experienced in April 2020, although it has not yet recovered to pre-pandemic levels. As I've discussed previously, one positive sign is that initial claims for state unemployment benefits have dropped to levels seen in past downturns prior to the pandemic. Initial claims are a barometer for the numbers of jobs that are disappearing, and it's good news that they have fallen. They recently plummeted to less than 600,000. While claims remain well above pre-COVID levels, they are no longer unprecedented. Other positive signals include the gradual opening up of more businesses as states are able to relax social distancing requirements. as long as hospitalizations remain under control and the vaccine rollout continues, a return to activities such as travel and dining out will boost the recovery. On the other hand, if variants and caseloads trend upward too far, as is occurring in some parts of the country, we could see increased uncertainty and other problems. Additional federal spending will enhance growth potential, whether through stimulus checks or spending of other types. The Federal Reserve remains committed to keeping low interest rates until the economy reaches pre-pandemic performance, which will spur near-term expansion. Supply chain issues continue to disrupt some industries. The pandemic caused closures of manufacturing facilities and shortages of specific items, such as semiconductors, persist. In addition, interruptions such as the blockage of the Suez Canal and weather challenges have exacerbated the problem. Time will be required to restore full efficiency, but this phenomenon is unlikely to dramatically constrict growth. While obstacles remain, the U.S. economy is expected to recover and see significant progress during the next 5 years. The Perryman Group projects that over the 2020 to 2025 period, real gross product will expand from the current level of an estimated $18.4 trillion to $22.9 trillion, a 4.41% annual rate of growth. Employment is forecast to grow by 17.4 million to reach 160.4 million in 2025, a 2.33% annual pace. Expansion is expected to be most robust over the next year or two as past losses are recouped, with gross product likely expanding by 7% or more in 2021, returning to more normal levels through the end of the forecast horizon. From the outset, I have emphasized that the economy would surge forward once we reached a sustainable situation with the virus. We are now seeing the beginnings of the next roaring 20s. Stay safe.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, April 25th, 2021. Other voices. Hello. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, April 25th, 2021. Guest View. Transparency Bills on the Move in the Texas Legislature by Kelly Shannon. Transparency bills are moving forward in the Texas Legislature with bipartisan support to promote open government and correct public information access problems that arose amid the COVID-19 pandemic. With about 5 weeks left in the legislative session, here's a status report on bills backed by the Freedom of Information Foundation of Texas, the Texas Press Association, the Texas Association of Broadcasters, and other members of the Transparent and Accountable Government Coalition. Texas Open Meeting Act Improvements. House Bill 2683 by Representative Terry Canales, D. Edinburgh, won unanimous approval in the Texas House of Representatives. It addresses online meetings allowed under the Texas Open Meetings Act. Though the virtual meetings provision of the law worked well for many governments during the pandemic, in some cases rules for public comment were unfairly imposed and telephone call-in lines were not provided to accommodate those without internet. HB 2683 corrects those problems. It now moves to the Senate. Texas Public Information Act compliance. House Bill 1416 by Representative Giovanni Capriglione, R. Southlake, received approval in the House State Affairs Committee. The legislation defines business days under the Public Information Act to ensure timely responses to public records requests. Throughout the pandemic, a number of government offices have not responded to requesters, citing the physical closure of their offices or because they were operating on a skeleton crew with staffers working remotely. However, many records today are available electronically, meaning they likely can be accessed remotely. The bill next moves to the full House. House Bill 3627 by Representative Chris Patty, R. Marshall, clarifies existing law pertaining to catastrophe notices that governments can file to briefly suspend TPIA responses during a disaster. This legislation adds specifics to the law to prevent abuse. It was approved by the House State Affairs Committee and is now moving to the full House. Senate Bill 1225 by Senator Joan Huffman, R. Houston, is the identical bill in the Senate and recently had a public hearing in the Senate Business and Commerce Committee. House Bill 3015 by Representative Ana Hernandez, D. Houston, won approval in the House State Affairs Committee and is heading to the full House. Enforcement measures in the bill require governments to respond to public records requesters, even if no responsive documents are found, so that requesters remain informed. It also calls for additional training if public officials aren't following the public information law. Nursing Home Pandemic Transparency. Senate Bill 930 by Senator Judith Zaffarini, D. Laredo, won passage in the Senate and is now in a House committee. Zaffarini's bill, including a key provision added from similar legislation by Senator Lois Kolkhorst, R. Brenham, ensures nursing home residents and their loved ones can get the information they need about communicable disease outbreaks, such as COVID-19. A House version of the bill, HB 3306, R. Wallace bill, was approved in committee and is headed to the full House. Other information access measures. House Bill 3535 by Representative Todd Hunter, R. Corpus Christi, which won approval in the House State Affairs Committee and now heads to the full House, reopens access to dates of birth in public records. Birth dates help ensure accuracy and aid citizens vetting a candidate for office, journalists identifying a person in a crime report, and banks, car loan companies, credit report firms, and employers relying on public record background checks to conduct business. House Bill 1810 by Capriglione was approved by the House State Affairs Committee and is headed to the full House. It provides access to searchable, sortable records, meaning that when government information is stored in spreadsheets or other electronic formats that can be searched and sorted, a requester has the right to ask for and obtain the records in that format. A little more than a month remains for lawmakers to act, so it's time for open government supporters across Texas to let legislators know they support these proposals. Let's remind our elected officials how crucial transparency is to government accountability, and that's important to us all. Kelly Shannon is Executive Director of the nonprofit Freedom of Information Foundation of Texas. For more information, go to www.foift.org.
Thank you for joining us for this week's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil sections. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org. Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Lifestyle sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, April 25th, 2021. Life and Times. Happily Ever After. Photos by Jacob Ford, Odessa American. Above, Permian High School choir students rehearse for the Black Magic Mojo show themed Happily Ever After Thursday at Permian High School. Happily Ever After will be performed at 7:30 p.m. on April 29th and April 30th and again at 1 p.m. May 1st at the Ector Theater. Below, Permian High School choir student Kendra Burton, center, is lifted by Hayden Abbott during rehearsal. Black Magic to Take the Ector Stage by Ruth Campbell, rcampbell@oaoa.com. Fittingly, it seems, as COVID-19 vaccinations roll out and restrictions are eased, the theme of this spring's Black Magic performance will be Happily Ever After. Set for 7:30 p.m. April 29th and 30th and 1 p.m. May 1st in the Ector Theater, tickets are $15 for students and $10 for children. Associate Choir Director Stephanie Burton said there are 16 vocalists and 9 band members, including sound people. The group has been working on the show since January. The theme was meant to be positive and uplifting. I think it's going to be so much fun. I like the combination of the arts. There's dancing with the Panther Paws joining us. There's acting.